Oasis Podcast episode 18, Reaction to Chinatown, and a talk tonight with Rob Fiderman from the Britpop Store. Podcast can now legally drink and get married without parents' consent, so that's good to know. It is Friday morning, the 30th of June, and Chinatown, the second single from Liam's upcoming As You Were album, was released last night. It was supposed to have been released at midnight, but then I think a Brazilian website accidentally sort of put it up a few hours early, so that caused lots of fun and games on Twitter and the various forums. And so what did you think? It's certainly different from Wall of Glass. It's much more relaxed and chilled out, and it's got this sort of blissful kind of summery acoustic-y vibe. I see people sort of saying Coldplay, which was interesting. I saw people saying Cherry Ghost, and Cherry Ghost is an interesting one. Let's drop a bit of a Cherry Ghost song in here and see what you think. Love that Cherry Ghost track. I haven't heard that for ages. Make sure you check Cherry Ghost out. So Simon Aldred is the main guy behind Cherry Ghost, and a couple of people had pointed out to me online yesterday that he had actually apparently been working with Liam, and so, you know, is this the song that they've been working on? So I actually dropped him a message at Cherry Ghost Band, and I asked, is this the new single by Chinatown that you were working on? He said, I did, but not on the album, I don't think. Maybe the next album. So that was an interesting one from Simon. It sounds like there's a couple of albums planned. Wow, that's quite bold. I did go back to them and sort of ask for a bit of clarification and find out a bit more. He hasn't come back to me, so I think maybe he's realised I'm a podcast. But so there you go. So that's not a Cherry Ghost co-written track, apparently, but we'll get to the bottom of it. One thing that people have pointed out is the lyrics. They are, I think, generally pretty dodgy. All of Oasis members and BDI have that habit of quoting Beatles songs fully. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, it says their happiness is still a warm gun, which, you know, is kind of a bit annoying. You know, I don't think there's any need to do that anymore. And, you know, and then he says, live this life of luxury, which is directly pulled from Sunny Afternoon by the Kinks. So good on you, Liam. Some of the lyrics are a little bit ropey. There's the line about a free man rhyming with a European, which is a bit of a stretch. I think Anton Tell called that on Twitter a gaping chasm rather than a stretch, which was, I think, quite good. However, you know, there is, I think there's a really good lyric in there, which is that one about telephonic doses eliminate neurosis. I think that's a nice little play on words, which you can imagine being in sort of a Super Furry Animals song or something like that. So I thought that was good. And I had an interesting sort of couple of messages from a guy called Kieran Clues, who said, I think the song has a bit more meaning than we think, in that stereotypically, the Chinese are made to work a lot and don't see the outside world as we do. What's it to be a free man? What's a European? Shows how held back the Chinese people are in the fact they believe work is their sole purpose for existence. The lyrics may actually be an insight into China. What do we think about that? Is Liam writing about the current situation in China? I think that, once again, that might be a bit of a stretch. But, you know, I think the interesting thing was, if, say, Bob Dylan had come out with this song, or a John Lennon, or even someone like, you know, modern that's respected, like a Nick Cave or someone like that, it would probably get a pass. You know, people would assume that there was, you know, genius behind it and hidden meaning that we just didn't know about. Whereas because it's Liam, I think people just already are down on him, that they just assume it's a lot of rubbish. And so that's an interesting one. I think it's different. I think a lot of it is perceived opinion. But a couple of those things are pretty hard to get your head around. But so really good to hear Chinatown. They also released the track listing for As You Were, which was good to see. So the track listing is Wall of Glass, Bold, Greedy Soul, Paper Crown, For What It's Worth, When I'm in Need, You Better Run, I Get By, Chinatown, Come Back to Me, Universal Gleam, and I've All I Need. So it's interesting. he then said Pub, which we don't know whether that means there's going to be a secret track called Pub, or more likely he just then went to the pub. So there you go. So that was really interesting, and we look out for more stuff from Liam in the next coming months before the album drops in October. So coming up shortly, we've got a really good interview with Rob Fiderman, who is I suppose you'd call him a consultant, a memorabilia expert. He runs a website called The Britpop Store, and he's good mates with quite a few people from bands. He's an expert on the 90s, and as we get into, you know, he's hit a lot of what he does now is actually helping people from bands and managers and people like that to sell all their old stuff, basically, to get it out of the dusty old lofts and cupboards and into the hands of collectors or museums or where this stuff deserves to be. So that's a really interesting discussion with Rob. I hope you enjoy that. Before we get into that, though, I just wanted to play you this. So I was a guest on a podcast this week, an American podcast called Outside the Cinema. It's hosted by a guy called Bill Fulkerson, who's a massive Oasis fan. He was very kind enough to ask me to come on to his podcast, and he'll be coming on having a chat with me a bit deeper about his experiences growing up with Oasis in the coming weeks. I'm not going to put the whole thing in here because we were aiming for half an hour. We ended up talking for about an hour, and we were mainly focused on British music-based movies. So, you know, as you might imagine, I was talking a lot about the Beatles films and the Who films, and Supersonic came in there as well, a few other bits and pieces. So that's going to be an interesting episode. That's going to be out in the next week or so. So if you aren't subscribed, go ahead and subscribe on iTunes to Outside the Cinema. And check that out. I think they're on Facebook as well. So that's an interesting group of people, especially if you're into sort of freaky movies. But when that launches, I'll point out when the segment just with me is, if you want to skip them talking about some weird Venezuelan slasher film or what it is, and skip straight to me just talking about The Who, then you can do that. But let's just drop in a little clip as a tease. So here's a couple of minutes. We ended up talking about music and Oasis and BDI for quite a while. So here's a bit of me talking to Bill about BDI.
Because I know when BDI first hit, and BDI literally made not even a blip on the radar here in the States. And
no.
From what I gathered, they did better over there, but still it wasn't really like a big deal.
No. And Liam didn't play any Oasis songs.
Well, that was the thing.
Any Oasis. So, you know, he wanted to have that clear separation. But in reality, it was the lineup that ended the last few years of Oasis, but just without Noel.
Yeah.
But the problem is Noel is the songwriter. So you take away the songwriter, and what have you got? You've got like a very good band, and they were a great live band.
They were good when I saw them live. I was bummed they didn't play. I thought maybe more. I mean, I got, you know, wanting the separation, and I thought, I'm like, oh, you know, but they might throw in, like, because Noel was playing two or three Oasis songs in his sets, like BDI, only at the very end of BDI, what I gather, they started to play some, because they knew, like, because, like, the BDI records, the two records, the first record, I don't really like at all. It's a really bad Beatles ripoff. But the second record, you know, the first track and the first single, The Flick of the Finger. I think that's an amazing track.
That's an excellent song. Yeah, but yeah, that's as good as anything in the later Oasis years.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's up. It doesn't matter if all our best tickets are sold. And all the old stories are told. It's a better record than the first record, but it's like you got this monster song at the front of it, and you're like, "Yes, this is awesome!" And Liam's vocals sounded better than they'd sounded in years, and you're like, "Sweet!" And it just never followed up.
No. It's disappointing. But you know, I mean, live they were still good because it's still Liam. I mean, Liam could front Northern Uproar. Liam could front any band. And it would be a great show because he is the best front man in the world, you know. Yeah. And even though he does nothing, you know, people sort of think, oh, well, you need to be like a Freddie Mercury, right? Or, someone jumping around and dancing around and things. But no, Liam stands there like he's going to come and punch you in the face. And it is the most captivating thing in the world.
It's so true.
Because, you know, it's just the confidence to stand there. Yeah, but it's football. You know, this is, you know, what you guys call soccer. This is the football way of a standoff. You know, you guys, you know, you're sort of bros over there. It's like, come at me, bro. Come at me, bro. No, we don't do that here.
Welcome to Boston.
No, it's you just stand there, stare at someone, and then go and headbutt them. And that's it. So Liam had that. Yeah. He's got it. He's got that stare. And there's a brilliant, you know, I interviewed Tony McCarroll, the original drummer, and his book is fantastic. It's the best book written about Oasis because he was there, you know. And he talks about, you know, them when they first started out and they'd be playing to like, you know, six people and a dog, and Liam would still be standing on the stage staring at these people like he's going to come and punch them. And it's like, you know, that's, there's no, oh, it's just, yeah, anyway, he's just he's a hell of a front man. Yeah. And so BDI were okay, but they just didn't have the songs.
So if you'd like to hear the rest of that interview, then, as I said, go ahead and look up Outside the Cinema. We've a little bit of going on over on the Patreon page, patreon.com/OasisPod. If you head on over there, there's a new couple of articles up. There was one by Richard Bowes. He did another one talking about the Stone Roses. I think I might mention that last episode. So if you haven't read that, go on and read that, because that's really good. And also we've got a new contributor, which is a guy called Kyle Cotter, and his articles are going to be under the name Columbia, so like column but with BIA on the end. And he has reviewed the Dublin gig, so he's about 19, he's from Dublin, and he wants to do a bit of writing for us as well. So that's going to be a different perspective, someone a bit younger in a different country. So yeah, he does a really good review of the Dublin gig, so head on over to Patreon and check that out. And while you're over there, if you wanted to sign up and become a supporter of the podcast, you are more than welcome. And we've had another one, another person sign up. Thank you very much to Fraser, who signed up at the $1 a month level. So he's clearly tried to keep it under the level where we write a song about him. So I don't know what that says about my songwriting and singing, but fair enough, Fraser. Thank you very much. Welcome aboard. And if anyone else wants to come on board, as I said, from $3 a month, that's where you will get a song written and recorded for you. And there's still, I still haven't heard from the other guy. So David, I won't say your second name in case you don't want it out there, but a chap called David signed up at $3 a month and hasn't got back in touch with me. So I'm more than happy to write you a song, but you've got to get in touch, man. So yes. And one other thing I've done is there's a website called TeePublic. So if you go to TeePublic and search for Oasis Podcast, you will see you can get T-shirts and hoodies and all kinds of merchandise with the Oasis Podcast logo on it. So if you want to show your love and support for the Oasis Podcast, then you can go and buy a T-shirt with it on. The easiest way to do that is if you just head to TeePublic and just search for Oasis Podcast. It should be the first thing that comes up. And I think it's $20, I think, for a T-shirt. So yeah, if you want to do that, go ahead and do that. That's good fun. So let's have a bit of music. Our good buddy Ross Hayes, who's a bit of a remix legend, has been at it again. He's on Twitter at H4ZD_. And he's on YouTube at Hazed. So if you just search for Ross Hazed or Hazed, you'll find him. He's done a version of Rock and Roll Star, which is really interesting. It strips away a lot of the drums and things, so you can really focus on the vocals and the guitar. So let's have a little bit of that here. I'll take my car, I'll drive real far. You're not concerned about the way we are. In my mind, my things are weird. Now you're concerned about the way I feel. Tonight, I'm a rock and roll star. So well done, Ross. Another great remix from Ross. If you want to get in touch with him, and if there's any songs that you want him to remix, then go ahead and do so. A couple of extra reviews we've had on the iTunes world. So M.Sprague on the US site has said, amazing. It's great to finally have a podcast dealing with Oasis. Really good, informative and entertaining podcast with great interviews. The host's genuine love for the band really comes across. Highly recommended. So thank you very much, M. Sprague. And on the UK site, we've had one more, which is As You Were by Statician or Static Ian. And it says, brilliant podcast. Really great to hear a genuine Oasis fan do something like this. Comes across really well. How much the boys mean to you and us. Great content from the past and present. Also really appreciate you playing a clip of my cover of Paper Crowns. Glad you liked it, chum. Static_Ian. And yeah, so he's on YouTube. He's the guy that did the really good Paper Crown cover last week. So yeah, go and check out his other stuff on YouTube. It's really good. And also a guy that nipped in last week with a little comment was Mick Dude, and he's done a review for us as well. He says, great podcast for Oasis fans, getting better by the episode, Mick Dude. So thank you very much, Mick Dude. And yeah, I think I said this was by Piccadilly Records, this review last week. It's not, but it's by Craig George Watson. He says, it's getting better, man. Great podcast, a must for all Oasis fans. Really enjoyed the Tony McCarroll, Steve White and Brian Cannon episodes in particular. I'm glad finally someone stepped up to the plate. Keep up the good work. Thank you all so much for getting in touch. I had a couple of milestones come up yesterday. I just passed 1,000 followers on Twitter, which was great. And I've just passed for the month of June, slightly less actually, because it was the first few days of June I was still with my previous podcast host, but since coming over to Audio Boom in under a month, we've had 25,000 listens, which is absolutely incredible. I'd never believed we'd be anywhere near that level. You know, a lot of that I do accept is going to stem from the Tony McCarroll episode, and about 5,000 of those have been list people listen to the Tony McCarroll, but then they're obviously going on, and even if people came across just for that one, they're going on and listen to the other ones as well. So and we're going to keep going, you know, we're going to keep going, keep doing good stuff. As I always say, if there's someone that you can put me in touch with, someone that you think I should be speaking to that I'm not, then please do so. Any help that you can give me in getting hold of people, feel free. So tag them on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is. That's how quite a few of these interviews have ended up being set up, is just my listeners just tagging people and saying, you should really speak to this person. And yeah, and so I do really appreciate all the help. And let's keep going. Let's make it even bigger. Okay, so we'll move on to the main event for today, which is the interview with Rob Fiderman. I hope you enjoy it. And so after this brief musical interlude, it will be me talking to Rob. So I am now joined by Rob from the Britpop Store. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm great, thank you. And yourself?
I'm very good, thank you, mate. I'm very good. Yeah, thank you so much for agreeing to come on. I do really appreciate it. I think.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's
anytime.
No, great. It's good, and it's yeah, it's one of those. You're another one of those names that I'll get the odd tweet and the odd message just saying, "Oh, you've got to get Rob on. He's a really good, you know, he's got stories to tell." So I'm hoping you're going to dish the dirt and give me loads of really juicy stories today.
Well, I'm sure there's one or two I could mention on air, yeah.
No, it's good. So I just wanted to get an idea of what you've got. Just give us a bit of a background for people that don't know of you, sort of what you're, who you are, what you do, and what's going on at the moment.
Well, my name's Rob Fiderman, and I set up the Britpop store back in 2011, basically buying and selling memorabilia, but it kind of snowballed into something I never really expected. So I'm now kind of a crossroads of what paths I'm now taking with it. So it's quite exciting, actually, at the moment.
And so what's the... So what was the inspiration, really, for... I mean, Britpop... was that your thing? Was that you getting into music?
Yeah,
was it Britpop?
Definitely, yeah, yeah. Obviously, I've grown up with like listening to like the Beatles and sort of a lot of the '60s music, British '60s music. I like, and obviously when Oasis came through and all the Britpop, I mean, I was there really right through the height. I'd been to Nebworth and I've been to see a lot of the bands, and that's really my era, Britpop.
Yeah, and where did you grow up, Rob?
Norwich in Norfolk.
Oh, right, that's interesting.
So we didn't get many big bands coming down there, unfortunately. So it was a case of travelling.
It was funny because Nick Amos, who was a couple of episodes ago, he's obviously not from Norwich itself, is he? But he's from Norfolk as well. So, did your parts ever cross growing up?
No. I mean, I know Meg Matthews's family. We're based in North Norfolk, and I remember the Christmas after Nebworth, Noel and Liam went down, and they were sort of spotted in a little country pub on the North Norfolk coast, which caused chaos. I mean, that was on all the news and everything. I mean, that was completely, people couldn't work out why they were there, you see. They were just having a regular drink with people. But her family was all over that way.
Oh, okay. And the other thing I forgot to say when I spoke to Nick, but... Wasn't it the Norwich Arts Centre that Richie Edwards from the Manix cut that four reel into his arm? I think that was there, wasn't it?
The Norwich Arts Centre, I'm not sure on that one, but I know I did see Oasis down there.
Yeah. No, I've got a feeling...
poster still from that gig.
You know that very famous picture where Richie's sliced four reel into his arm? And, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was at Norwich Arts Centre in about 1993 or something, maybe, but I don't know. That's just whenever I think of Norwich and sort of Britpop and rock and roll, that's kind of the image that I always remember. But
I'm glad you didn't mention Mr. Partridge then.
No, well, when you said North Norfolk, because that is, I mean, the fact is, he's North Norfolk Digital, isn't he? So
I'm Alan Partridge, and this is Mid Morning Matters. North Norfolk Digital.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite cool.
I think you raised the Partridge, you raised the Partridge in the room. I mean, do you get some grief now as soon as you say Norwich? It's like, oh, Alan Partridge?
No, not so much. It's just sort of jokes about it being like a small kind of place, and yeah. You can imagine, can't you, sort of geography things, really. But, I mean, we didn't really have many sort of famous people out of Norwich. I mean, we had Kathy Dennis.
Yeah.
I think the guy from The Darkness, I think he was from Lowestoft.
Yeah.
There wasn't like a massive kind of like, you know, music scene there. But, you know, I moved out of there in the early 90s and went to Manchester. So that was a real eye-opener. I lived there for about 2.5 years.
Oh, cool. What was that? Was that for work or for uni or something?
Yeah, basically, just because I was doing sort of singing and songwriting at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the best place to be at the time, so I did it out there for about a year or so, and then moved out to the States.
Oh, wow,
and,
okay.
Did it. Yeah, it was just, but obviously, as you can guess, I didn't get too far with it, but I still, you know, gave it a good crack at the time and enjoyed it. So I do have a real love of music. It's not just I just buy stuff and sell it. Are you with me? There is a real passion there with music and bands that have influenced my life as well. I mean, basically, I've been collecting for about 20 years now, music memorabilia, and it was mainly always the Beatles stuff or 60s stuff I used to collect. And I was buying this stuff, and I, you know, loads of it, too much stuff. So I started getting rid of some of it. And then found I was quite enjoying actually doing this. And then I thought one day, well, nobody's really doing anything with Britpop. So I thought, well, I'll open a little web page up and sell some stuff on there and buy help fund me get some, you know, more interesting items.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't really any sort of plan for it. So I opened it up in 2011, just for a bit of a hobby, really. And then I think it wasn't long after, it was only about 3 or 4 months after, I got a phone call from Alan McGee, which completely blew me away, really.
Yeah.
And that was kind of funny. He thought I was absolutely mad what I was doing. He thought it was so funny. He said, "Why don't you just come down to my house in Wales and have a look at some stuff I've got?" And then this is where it kind of started.
Oh, okay.
And obviously I did some stuff for him and then for his charity. And then he passed me on to other sort of people from bands. And then it kind of sort of went on from there.
Oh, that's cool, man. It's funny, when I spoke to, I mean, I know your paths have crossed with Brian Garcia over the years as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
And and I mean, he was saying that, it was the conversation with Tony McCarroll, that Tony had said that Brian, because he's had quite a bit to do with Brian Garcia, and he was like talking about buying some jeans off him, like the jeans that he was wearing in the Live Forever video. And he just happened to have them because they're a pair of jeans that still fit him. And, you know, he still wears them, like, you know, around the house or whatever. But Brian Garcia is, like, trying to buy his jeans off him. But it's...
Everybody collects different things. And I think this is really what makes it so interesting. You know, some people collect the records. Some people like the props that one album covers. Some people like clothing. I mean, I helped handle the sale for Tony's drum kit. Got put that down in the auction in London. I mean, it was absolutely amazing to see that in his spare room at home. And when it was all stacked up, it wasn't set up. And when I was talking to him, I couldn't help it. I just picked up a drumstick and hit the snare drum. And he's like, "God, Rob," he said, "that hasn't been played for like 20 years.
Bloody hell.
And it's like, God, I mean, there's so many people now ask about that drum kit as well.
Wayne Rooney may soon be walking to a different beat. Apparently, the Manchester United and England footballer has got his eyes on some rock and roll history. Former Oasis drummer Tony McCarroll's revealed he's selling the drum kit he used for the band's Definitely Maybe album, performing on tracks like Cigarettes and Alcohol and Supersonic, which gained the group huge success. Tony says he's selling a lot of his old gear and that Rooney's after his old drums. Maybe he'll become a real rock and roll star.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so iconic. But yes, I mean, people collect different things, and I think that's what makes it really so interesting. You know, and also, it's where do you stop? I mean, you know, you just can keep collecting and getting different things. Some people focus on just getting tickets. Some people like posters. I mean, I like really sort of more interesting, unique kind of stuff. But Brian's got a really great collection. I mean, his collection's fantastic, and, you know, we've both helped each other along the way with getting different bits and bobs. But, you know, there is stuff out there. I mean, I'm kind of in a lucky position now where I've got ex-band members or managers or photographers or people in the design or people who worked on the merchandise and are coming to me saying, "Look, we've got this. Is it worth anything?" And you think, "Oh, my God, what? They don't realise, do they?" So I try to, you know, obviously I've got first pickings myself, but that, you know, after sort of 5-6 years doing this, you can't physically buy everything. I mean, even if I could, I don't know where I'd really put it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So, and you kind of get a bit more relaxed. You know, the first time I started meeting ex-band members, especially from like Oasis and stuff, it's like, "Oh my God," you know, you're just in so much shock. And the fact that, you know, you can have a pit, you know, like when I first met Bonehead, I mean, you know, when he was at Nebworth, he was like a matchstick man on the stage. And then you're around his house, he's like, "Rob, do you want a coffee while you're here?" And you're like, "What the hell?" You know,
well, you must have a fleet of
stuff they've got.
Have you got a fleet of servants to bring me a coffee? It's like, no.
I don't. Well, no, a lot of them, you know, they're really down to earth. I mean, everyone I've met's been really good, you know, and they, you know, at the end of the day, let's face it, I am a fan.
Yeah.
You know, if I can just have a picture with one of my idols and get them to sign thing, and if I can help them along the way sell stuff, I mean, you know, obviously some people don't want it flashed around. You know, they want it to be sold, you know, discreetly. And you know, there are people that say to me, "Look, if you can get this off him or that off her, could you sort of let me know?" But I mean, you know, people's collections are really, really good. I mean, there's a lot of people that display on social platforms what they've got. I always think, It's the collectors that don't show the things they've got are the most interesting and, you know, mysterious, aren't they? Because I met somebody who doesn't put anything up on anywhere what they've got, and when they started telling me what they had, it was like, oh my God, you know, I mean, and you know, the thing is, a lot of collectors like things what we call unseen. So if I went to like down to see Alan McGee, and I go down to his basement, and we find stuff that's just sat there for like 15, 20 years. Once that comes to the marketplace, there is such a buzz and excitement about it. If a collector bought it and just kept it quietly in his own collection, I mean, this is where, you know, there is such a higher value then, because, you know, if people have seen pictures of it for years and years and then it comes up for sale, the kind of, it's kind of lost a bit of an appeal. I mean, because you can get so impulsive, a lot of collectors can see things and just want it straight away, you know. But, it is exciting, and it's amazing, like you said about the jeans, what people still have and what they still use, you know, especially with some of the equipment. I mean, I went to see an ex-band member who was in Ocean Colour Scene, and he had a little Mini Cooper, a little Rover Mini Cooper that he wanted to sell, and they all had one. I think it was on 100 Mile High.
Okay, in the video.
They all had little Mini Coopers. Kate Moss did the voiceover. It was a real cool 90s, you know, iconic sort of TV advert.
Ocean Colour Scene, marching already, out now.
And he still had one, and I said, oh, I didn't think you still have it. Yeah, that's why we're selling it, you know. He was going to give it to his daughter who's starting university, but she's like, no, I don't want that. So it's like, what are we going to do with it? So that's where some of these things, you know, a lot of these people save the gold records and awards for the kids, but when they get older, they just don't want it. So their view is, well, they'd rather it go to a fan or a collector than someone who'd really appreciate it.
So
I found that I was going through more people coming to me with different bits and bobs. Then I got approached on a few TV shows, which was quite good, because they have a lot of these antique auction style programs where they always have people can value jewelry and watches and sort of artwork, but when it comes to sort of music memorabilia, they always say, oh, well, we've spoken to someone at Bonhams or something, but they never have anybody to show a face to be present to do this. So I've been picked up now on about sort of four programs I've done, just sort of walk-on roles, just to value stuff. There's a new show coming up, hopefully this year, next year, brand new show that I've been asked to go on as a sort of memorabilia expert for them. I mean, I might just go on once or twice. Do you know what I mean? But that's good. And I've been used on the local BBC radio just to talk about sort of current music things that are coming up, or like when Bananarama reformed, they asked me to speak about that. Well, you know, That's not like a massive thing for me, Bananarama. But, you know, if I'm going to go on the radio, it's great, isn't it? It's all good experience.
Yeah, good exposure.
You know, you have to have a wide kind of knowledge of sort of music, popular culture. I mean, that is my specific area, would be sort of 90s Britpop, you know, and obviously I love Oasis. But, you know, things come along, opportunities come along, and you just have to really take them, don't you? So you never know what's going to come around the corner. And what band member's going to ring you up, or what somebody will offer you.
And is it hard? I mean, is it tricky where you see something and you think, oh, I just want that for my collection? But
I think I'm really quite proud of myself now. The last couple of years, I'm thinking, God, I'd love that. And then I think, oh, yeah, but you know, then will I get it framed? And where am I going to put it?
And then
you know, I think, well, I wonder if I know anyone who'd like it, and then I think about people that probably like these kind of things. But, and that's where the state of play is with my little website now. I mean, I've I've really sort of neglected it really and haven't put a lot of stuff on, because really now, as I say, I'm not really buying stuff to really sort of sell it. I'm now doing more consultancy for band members, people in the music business that have got things that they want selling, and my job is then to really sell it for them, or value it or find the best way forward. And also it saves me buying loads of stuff, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah. So you're more like a broker now, really, I suppose. That's the...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was asked to help out at both Oasis exhibitions, which was good fun.
Oh, cool.
That's when I ended up drinking with Liam. That was the first time I met him, actually. That was a kind of a crazy night.
Oh, go on.
That was down in Shoreditch. Well, I'd gone down to Shoreditch for the Chasing the Sun exhibition, and I went down on my own, actually, and I walked into the pub next door because I thought, well, I might as well have a quick drink while I'm here. And I heard Rob, and I thought, who the hell's that? Because I don't really know anyone around there. And Brian Cannon was there, so I had a drink with him, and he said, oh, have you met Paul Gallagher? So I said, well, no. So I met him, and then Bonehead came in. Next minute I'm drinking with everyone at the bar, and I'm like, this is not right, I can't believe this. So I just kind of like went along with the flow. And then they said, right, we're off to meet Liam now. So I thought, well, fair enough, I'll do one, right? And then they went, are you coming? I'm like, are they serious? So I just went with them, and it was frantic because we couldn't find what bar he was in. And when we did find him, he was just sitting with his girlfriend at the bar, and he was just such a great guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was everything you'd want your idol to be. I mean, you know, he had a chat with me, you know, and he bought me a couple of drinks and had a few photographs. And, you know, that was just something that you won't forget. And that is the best thing, isn't it? That's better than having any kind of memorabilia to be in that sort of situation. So that was a good one. Funny story. I could tell you one kind of funny story, actually. I'd gone down to see Alan White in London because he was selling some drums. He took me down to his storage unit. And after I'd seen him, I had to get the train back to Stoke-on-Trent from London.
Mm-hmm.
Just before I'd left him, he had a few tambourines there, and one of them was Liam's. So he said, oh, thanks for coming down. Take this tambourine with you, one of Liam's old tambourines. It's Rhythmtex. So I was buzzing, completely buzzing with this. So I put it in my bag. Anyway, after a few drinks around London, and just about managing to get on the last Virgin train. First carriage as I got in, what I basically did was I wasn't travelling first class, but because it was getting a bit tight getting on the train, I just got straight onto first class.
Yeah.
And I knocked a guy with my bag, and it made a jingle, you see, and he was quite a deep voice with thespian actor, very smart guy, and he said, what's that, you know, and I said, well, it's a tambourine, and because I'd had a couple of beers at the time, I said, oh, it used to be Liam's, like. He said, oh, sit down with me. And I said, well, I'm not in first class. Oh, it's fine. Tell me about this tambourine. He said, I've met those Gallaghers before and this, that, the other. So he sat down, and then they came with a drinks trolley. And he said, what would you like if you're drinking? And I'm like, well, I'll just have a beer. So he got me a beer. The conductor said, where's your ticket? He's my friend. He doesn't need it. He's with me. I thought, what the hell's going on anyway? So all the way back, he was talking to me. And he told me he'd been in a Bond film. Well, I was already on cloud nine with his tambourine, and really, he could have told me anything. I was just completely buzzing, so you see.
Yeah.
And I just thought he'd been an extra in it or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he was going all the way to Manchester. I got off at Stoke. Anyway, we must have exchanged Twitters or something, because in the morning, I got this guy followed me. And I thought, who's Colin Salmon? Who's this? So it's this thing about an actor. So I Googled him. I was like, oh, my God. God, he's been in loads. He's like one of the most iconic British black actors. I mean, he's been in two James Bond films. He's been in like Marvel films or those action films. I don't really watch a lot of films.
Yeah.
But he's been in absolutely loads of programmes. And there was one actually on at the time. I think it was called Some Girls Can or something. It's like a, it was like an adult sort of Grange Hill that was on in the evening.
Oh, right, yeah.
It was on, I think it was on that channel that they took off. It was on, was it BBC4
BBC3,
or something?
BBC3,
it was, like a, it was like a comedy. It was great, it was. And I just got this message saying that, the character I played, he was called Rob at the time I met you on the train. And he's, like, stayed in touch.
Oh, cool.
It was just somebody that you meet from just something crazy like that, you know. But it was quite funny if you were there at the time. You know,
yeah,
I had no idea who this bloke was. Every time I mention it to people, they're like, oh, God, why didn't you get him to sign? I have a picture with him. I was like, oh, I don't know. I was just... But when you've been with one of the band members or someone you really look up to and you've had a great day with them, I'm just, my head's in the shed, you know. I just totally, you know, you just sort of slip into it, don't you? You know?
Yeah. No, well, I've heard that. I've heard that from other people that they've met. I remember hearing a story from someone that, like... ended up on a train with Gary Barlow, and they didn't know who Gary Barlow was. Like, it was like an old, it was like, you know, their, I think it was a friend of mine's
like
dad.
Like Heather Mill saying she didn't know who Paul McCartney was.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah,
kind of. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Well, the trouble is, because I'm so into my music, and I don't really get a lot of time to watch films, you see. So, yeah. Obviously, when I looked back and saw who he was, I was like, oh, what a prat, you know.
Yeah.
But then again, you see, because I suppose I was quite, you know, relaxed and just talking to him, he was probably quite happy, wasn't he, that I didn't really know who he was. That's probably why he talked to me all the way back.
But, yeah, exactly. If you were bothering him about, like, you know, oh, what was this
James
person
Bond.
Like? Yeah, 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 exactly. No, yeah. No, that's cool, man. That's good. So you've met... So go on.
So, yeah, so I've met in kind of order, I think. It was, like, Alan, obviously Alan McGee first, then Steve White, met Damon Michello, then I went down to meet Alan White, obviously Bonehead. I haven't met Quiggs yet, because he's quite reclusive.
Yeah.
I met Andy Bell, he's great. I'm hopefully meeting Gem Archer soon, which I'm looking forward to. But it's just trying to find Quiggs, isn't it? Because he has gone a bit reclusive, hasn't he? There is some picture surfacing of him at Christmas, and there was one of him DJing somewhere.
He DJed with Phil Smith a few years ago, and this is like early 2000s now. Him and they did a tour, and I've tried to get hold of him, and the closest I've got is his sister, who I follow on Twitter, and we had a couple of messages back and forth, and she's very polite, she's a lovely woman, Mary, and she just said, you know, Paul really appreciates the fans, and he loved his time with Oasis, but you know, he's a very private person. And he just wants to be left alone, and you know, fair enough.
Yeah, a lot of them do. They just want to, you know, have a family life now and sort of chill out, you know. And why shouldn't they, really? They've given a lot of time, haven't they, with what they've done. Yeah. They just want some of the life back now, I think.
And I think someone like Quiggs, I mean, you know, he wasn't... It's not like someone like a Liam that's gone out and sought the limelight, you know, or like a Damon Albarn.
No, he was quite quiet, wasn't he?
He was a quiet bloke who happened to join a band with a few mates that, you know, I'm sure if he had... You know, he wasn't expecting them to go on and be the bloody biggest band in the world. He was just happy, you know, playing a few gigs with his mates in and around Manchester. And it just so happens they happened to accidentally snare the best songwriter in the world and the best frontman in the world, accidentally.
And I think you've got that. It's just a few mates. You see, you have to think after the third album, you know, did it stop being fun for some of them? You know, it got very serious, very corporate, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it was completely different to when they were creation back in the early days. And I think some of the fun had kind of gone and, you know, different things happened, don't they, along the way. And it's like anything, isn't it? It's like friends, you know, growing up with friends, and people get married, have kids, you know, people don't really want to do this anymore, don't want to tour, bickering over who's writing what or something, you know. So I think it was inevitable, wasn't it? But I'm just fed up with people asking me, are they going to get back together again?
So are they going to get back together again?
Well... I don't think so, but you know, who am I to say? You know, I'd love it. You know, I thought it was great at the Isle of Manchester when Liam came on.
Yeah, that was magic.
I wasn't so sure about Chris Martin singing on there.
Yeah, not so much. But you know,
Do you think they could get a ball and chain when he gets on that piano would stop him from dancing. I mean, my dancing isn't great, but he's seriously needs some choreography for all the money he's got, hasn't he?
He's, yeah, you'd think he... Oh, that's why they turn them into monkeys in that video. Did you see that one? Well, they have them all the CGI monkeys.
Yes.
I think get the CGI monkeys out instead. That would be good.
Yeah, but he ain't really very rock and roll, is he, really? They're trying to be U2, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
Even in their album covers, they're trying to do that, aren't they? I've never really been a big... I mean, I respect him as an artist, songwriter, too. You know, there is Coldplay songs that the early ones I liked, but I'm not massive on them. But I'm not keen on him singing Don't Look Back in Anger.
No.
But what do you do, you know? But I thought Liam did a great job.
Yeah.
His voice is great.
Yeah, I thought he sounded strong. And I'm just really enjoying seeing him in all these interviews. You know, seeing him, like, being recorded in interviews. Because I always loved Liam's interviews. But they sort of held him back quite a lot. Or whether he didn't want to. Or whether it was deliberately left to Noel.
I mean, we all know what he was like back in the day, don't we? Mm. I mean, they were probably a bit dubious, weren't they? What he was going to say or something. But, I mean, when you meet him, he's, you know, I've met Noel... obviously, it probably wasn't the right situation when I met him, but it wasn't as enjoyable as meeting Liam, put it that way.
Where did you meet Noel then, Rob, if you can talk about it?
I got invited to go down to a gig he did for Absolute Radio. I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago. It was just 100 people only could go. It was mainly like competition prize winners. It was down near Peckham. There's gold in the city, but never quite enough now to pay the rent. You could have had it all, but the pity is everything you're gonna need is never the same. Maybe the dream that we had is gone. The people around here are like a setting sun. They're bigging you up when they're knocking you down, but they can't stop me from loving you. Rivoli Ballroom.
Oh, yeah.
I met him outside before the sound check. It was quite funny, actually. We were all waiting outside, and everyone kept seeing these Range Rovers and Mercedes going past, and everyone kept leaning forward. And then right opposite was a train station, and he just comes across the road with a shoulder bag, backpack, and comes across the road. Like, completely shocked, you know.
Just got the train down.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, would you really want to be talking to people before, you know, a sound check? There's people out there. I suppose it can get a bit of a grind, but you have to remember, though, we are the people that sort of helped put them there by buying stuff, didn't we?
Absolutely.
Supporting them all that time. I mean, he does sign stuff. He doesn't really talk a lot, but, I mean, Liam will just drop everything and have pictures with you, put his arm around you and, like those lads that couldn't get any tickets.
Yeah, I like that.
Last week. I mean, that is what he's like.
I haven't included that actually, so I'm going to drop a little clip of that in here.
Yeah. Oh my God, thank you so much.
Any chance to call the pictures in?
Yeah. He's a young man.
Oh my Jesus.
There's no chance of it.
You know what? Let me just do this because I'll fuck it up. That looks cool that now, doesn't it?
Thank you very much.
All arms are shaking.
Yes!
Oh, good.
Unfortunately, Liam, we couldn't get tickets.
Thank you,
so this is the only way we can see you.
All right, lads. See you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
you,
Mo.
Yo. Hey, who's
Liam.
Got tickets? Liam.
We don't.
Yeah, we
all
don't have tickets.
We don't have tickets, Liam. Any help?
Write your names down for us,
yeah? Yes.
Do you have anything to write down?
Put your full name on that. And then just put plus one, two, three, four, five.
Put plus five.
Thanks so much, Liam.
Oh my God, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Liam.
Thanks so much.
Much love. Much love.
Thank you.
As you were.
All right, mate.
As you were.
Thank
you. As you were.
Yeah!
Jesus.
But that was... although some people I saw online saying they think that was fake. What do you think?
Um, No, I don't think so. I don't think that looks set up at all.
No.
I don't think so. I think he is quite generally like that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he is a man of the people, a man of the fans. I mean, if you went up to him and said, look, I can't get in, I mean, I don't know whether he's going to turn around and tell you to do one or he's going to do that. I think he's just on a massive high at the moment. It's great to see him back out, and he's obviously having a great time, and I think he just wants to look after his fans.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you know? It's been great. No, it's, as I said, it's just been great having him around and doing the rounds on the press, because he's always entertaining. He's always good for good value.
I mean, Supersonic, I mean, that's obviously, you know, brought everything up to the to the height, hasn't it, everything? Mm. And obviously, you spoke to Nick recently, haven't you?
Yeah.
Regarding his book, She's Electric.
Mm.
There's sort of talks in the pipeline of turning that into a film.
Yeah, which would be great. You know, and I think that there hasn't been enough, when you think about the cultural significance of Britpop, you know, and how there hasn't really been a movement since, and that everything that was combined with it, would like the Brit, the artists at the time, like the, you know, your Damien Hirst and people like that, and you know and
what,
the films and there was so much.
Factor in. Yeah, they all factor in. I've wondered this as well. Why you never hear this? Do you like Kate Moss? You know, Damien Hirst. I mean, all these things were iconic, weren't they? Even Red Stripe Lager. All these things were iconic back in the time. I mean, the book is different because I think it's covering four lads that are looking for love and rock and roll, and they fall into the Britpop thing. Mm. But that's covering all other kind of creation bands as well, like the Jesus and Mary Chain, and I think like Ride and stuff. Mm. That would be quite exciting if that comes off fairly soon. They've asked me to be like a top consultant for them. So that should be good fun.
Mm, that'd be great.
Can't say much more at the moment about that, but that would be good, because I think, you know, there's millions of people out there would love to see these kind of films.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's the thing, is surely it's, you know, even just doing this podcast, it's like, you know, there's such an audience for that period of the 90s, and it's now like, you know, it's the people that of sort of our generation that grew up with that are now in their 30s and 40s have got a bit of money in their pockets maybe, and are willing to spend it on stuff. So, you know, so there is a massive you know, there's a massive market out there. I mean, being sort of horribly commercial about it, there is a market out there for this stuff, you know. And I mean, you've seen it,
a commodity, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen it in the movies that, like, in movies, it's generally been, you know, they brought out a Power Rangers movie this year, and they're always doing, like, you know, films based on 80s films, and now that's moving kind of into 90s films as well. And that's the, you know, and you get retro gaming, and you get retro all this sort of stuff, but it just doesn't, it feels to me like, yeah, people, you know, the corporations are missing a trick, because that was the time, you know, and it was such a massive thing with... Even with the politics and with Blair coming to power and all that sort of stuff, it was huge, you know. And you know, and when you think about, like, well, what's there been since? You know, if someone says to me, describe me 1995 or 1996, you know, you've got such a very clear image. Whereas describe 2004, I don't know. the last sort of 15, 20 years have just been a bit of a, you know, samey, really. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I went down to Alan's club and a few months ago, and I saw Ride. They did an acoustic gig, and Caster down there in a few months' time. I mean, they're all back out, aren't they?
Yeah.
Dodgy, Space, you know, a lot of the you know, Black Grape, Happy Mondays. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, people need this music back in their lives, you know. Mm. Yeah, you could say it's about memories and this kind of thing, but I think it's the honest music.
Mm.
You know, it's the music that people want back. They're just fed up with all this manufactured stuff.
Yeah. No, cool. So, I mean, going on to music, mate, what was your... So, growing up, was it Oasis really the big band for you?
Yeah. Ocean Colour Scene and Oasis. I think the Cooler Shaker, which were a bit underrated, in my opinion. You know, I thought they had some great stuff. I liked them at the time, Cooler Shaker. I mean, there's so many, isn't there? Pulp, Shed 7, I mean, you know, and there was a lot of girl bands as well, wasn't there? Like Echo Belly.
That's very true. You know, I was thinking
that people forget about all these as well.
I was exactly that, and there was an article that Tracy Thorne from Everything But the Girl wrote.
Yeah.
And it was basically a couple of months ago, and it was basically slagging off Britpop, and it was saying that, you know, if you look at the Brit Awards '94, there was like Bjork and PJ Harvey, and there was, you know, and you know, a lot more kind of diverse acts were winning things. But then when you get into Britpop, and it was primarily, you know, skinny white boys in bands, you know, which it was primarily, but you can't forget like the amount of female fronted bands that there were at the time. It's crazy, you know.
Elastica,
Sleeper, Echo Belly, Lush,
yeah.
You know. And I actually did like a Spotify playlist, like Women of Britpop, and Kinnicky, you know, like there's so many of them.
As well was,
Yeah, and there's so many of them at the time that, you know, and really good bands as well. And that they weren't, you know, there just wasn't, you know, even, I mean, there hasn't been a movement since. I mean, I suppose you could say that sort of from like around Kaiser Chiefs, Arctic Monkeys, Franz Ferdinand, Razorlight, that was kind of like another movement, but not the same, you know, not anywhere near to the same degree.
By 99, really, I mean, we had the Spice Girls come in, didn't we, sort of, was it 97, 98, and by 99, 2000, I mean, it sort of finished, I think, in Italy, they still thought it was going on till about 2012, you know, but it is interesting you mention those other bands, because I'm doing a small book at the moment, like a photo book of like the top sort of 25 Britpop memorabilia items.
Oh, perfect.
And, you know, the thing about it, though, is because, you see, obviously Oasis are the most popular in terms of memorabilia and the most sought after and the most expensive, to be honest with you. Especially like a lot of those bands that you mentioned. I mean, I was really struggling to find bits of memorabilia or giveaways that they've given out, but you know, it's sort of more the bigger bands like Pulp, Ocean Colour Scene, you know, Oasis, Blur. I mean, they're the sort of most collectible things price wise so that was kind of hard looking around at other things to include in the book, but I kind of got there in the end. But one thing I have noticed is that I spoke to a couple of ex-band members from the top sort of three bands, and they hate this term Britpop. They hate it. I mean, you know, Bonehead was seen on an interview, wasn't he, with Liam, saying, you know, I effing hate this Britpop term, you know, we weren't Britpop. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was always little genres, wasn't there, from shoegazing, which was at the start, wasn't there, and sort of turned into sort of Britpop. But you know, whether people like it or not, that is like the swinging 60s, isn't it? And then
exactly.
Sort of Britpop, you know, so I mean, there's no really getting away from it.
No, there comes to a point where you say, look, it was Britpop. That's kind of, history has decreed that that's the case.
And Damon Albarn tells stories that he would go out to the pub or into a shop or whatever, and as soon as people saw him, they'd either start singing Oasis songs or they'd put one on the stereo. It just became inescapable.
And then 6 months later, the other Damon and all that lot are saying, well, it's just really fucking hard, like, you know what I mean? So I've got people shouting at me in the streets and everywhere I go, into a pub, someone puts an Oasis. Well, that's what it fucking is, man. You know? That's how fucking hot it is in the kitchen. Those Nancy boys all got a bit fucking freaked out by Fame, didn't they? And all went to Priory and rehab and fucking all got psychiatrists and all that. I could went straight back to the bar, you know? We were just fucking having it.
You know, it's like you can say the Jam weren't a punk band, you know, and like most of the big punk bands would say, oh, we're not a punk, we weren't a punk band, or we weren't, or like, you know, we weren't New Romantic or whatever. Well, it's like, well, no, once history's kind of decided that you were, so get over it. And you know, you said about the top three, I mean, Damon Albarn sort of come out and said, oh no, I always hated the term Britpop. Well, hold on, Damon, who starred and hosted Britpop Now, you know, and I included the intro clip of it on a couple of episodes ago, but he sat there saying, you know, the top Britpop bands, and the show was called Britpop Now, and Damon hosted it. I mean, I know the term Britpop had been coined before and had been used before, but I definitely remember, like, that was the big one when everyone I knew sat down and watched that Britpop Now show.
Because it was grunge, wasn't there? There was the grunge.
Mm, mm.
But, I mean, the thing is, I kind of, you know, did really struggle finding other bands, because I was sort of, it was mentioned to me that could I not put like the Happy Mondays in, or the Stone Roses, because they were pre-Britpop. Mm. But when you look at Pulp, that were at the height in 95, 96, they came out in like 1988.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
A lot of these bands that were hit, I mean, that's why he probably looks a little bit older than some of the other ones, because actually he wasn't a spring chicken when they were peaking, were they? I mean, they'd been out for a while. I mean, a lot of these bands that I couldn't really include that didn't fit the genre, I mean, it's like Radiohead, isn't it? Some people say, well, are they really Britpop? I mean, there's lots of lists on the internet of people that they put what they think Britpop bands are, and some of them, you just can't believe they've fitted in this list.
No, absolutely. I mean, Pulp, going back to them, I think they started out in like 1979. You know, and did Peel sessions back then, but then were just completely under the radar all throughout the 80s, and then just suddenly came back then. But no, it's weird that, I mean, something I was talking about to someone the other day when we were talking about the band Terrorvision. Do you remember Terrorvision?
Yes.
And and they were just in that early period.
They did Tequila, didn't they?
Yeah, they did Tequila. That was their sort of later on. They had that, but they had an album in '94. It had like Middleman and Oblivion and a couple of other. They had about six really big singles just pre-Britpop. And because they had long hair as well and they were a little bit more on the rock side, when Britpop came along, now, I mean, they were massive. But you wouldn't ever, if someone says name top 20 Britpop bands, you wouldn't put Terrorvision on there, you know.
And there's like the ones that sort of joined on at the end, like Menswear. I mean, people wouldn't really include them, but they all jumped on the bandwagon, because everybody, let's face it, like myself as well, when we were trying to be in bands and singing and songwriting, we all wanted to be Oasis. And can you imagine what it was like at Creation or Polydor or these indie labels? Everyone sending demo tapes in, sounding like Oasis, and, you know, trying to dress and look like them. I mean, you know, that's why I thought, like, Cooler Shaker had their own sort of spin on it, didn't they?
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of people sort of followed suit, though. But, I mean, Ocean Colour Scene, I mean, look at them. I mean, they've got such a huge fan base even today.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, so if people are out there, you know, I know from Twitter and Facebook and things that there's people out there that have got some really good stuff, that have got memorabilia from the time.
Definitely.
So, I mean, are there things that you're specifically looking out for, or bands, sort of merchandise that you would be interested in if people want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, if they're not sure how to sell it, or they're not really sure what it's worth, or, you know, it's somebody in the music business who's got, like, a load of stuff, I could always like have a look through it. It's sometimes it's the least things that people have got. They think, oh, it isn't worth much. And you know, I was talking to someone from another sort of early Creation band a few months ago, and he didn't kind of get what it was that I did. And when I was talking to him, he said, "Oh, that's funny." He said, "I've got this jacket that's still preserved in a zip-up bag that I wore on an album cover. Is that worth anything?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah." You know, so it's surprising a lot of people a bit detached from it, but the main reason is it's that part of the life, that chapter's gone now, and they, you know, some of these people's houses I go to and I think, my God, I can't wait to see the house, all these gold discs and guitars everywhere. And I tell you what, if you were a burglar and broke in, you just wouldn't believe it, because there's nothing there. Most of these people have got it in a cupboard. Look, my daughter doesn't want it, or my son doesn't want it. We just really want it out the way. Is it worth anything, or could you donate it to charity? And that's kind of always quite surprising, actually, the people that don't have things displayed at home or they don't use it anymore. And it's a shame. That's why it's nice to go to collectors, like you say, that really appreciate it and display it. Or get it put into exhibitions. I mean, there is one. I've been asked possibly to take part in a project with a charity called Musicians Against Homeless. That's quite a high profile charity. They've got people like Lily Allen and Russell Brand, like patrons. And basically, they put on 100 gigs last year. And it's to raise money for, you know, like homeless people and giving them better opportunities. And they do like awards for like upcoming bands and stuff. We're looking to do like a high profile charity auction at the end of the year. So I've been asked to kind of advise on that and try and get stuff donated from people in the business as well. But that will be something, obviously with a lot of media as well, that would be something quite exciting, that one. So really, I just really kind of roll with it, if you pardon the pun. Whatever comes along, if I can do it, I'll do it, you know. But at the end of the day, if you ask me why I'm really doing it, it's because I love music. I love the Britpop Oasis era. And if I can meet people that I've idolised and look up to, and they still sign sync for me, and I have a chat with them, and if I can sell sync for them, and they're really pleased, then I can't ask for anything more. So that's really, it's just more of a passion has come. It's something I couldn't go to university for, isn't it? You know, you do have to wing it at some points, and you know, it's just something that over the years I feel I've got more confident with, and getting over not trying to buy everything, and just going along with it, because it's something that I'd never really planned to do. But it's quite humbling when people ring you up and say, look, so-and-so's recommended you, and you think, bloody hell, you know, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, come down to our house in London next week, and you think, God, wow. So, you know, I tried to play it cool, but you can't, can you, if it's somebody that you really want to meet, you know. So once I've got over that shock of meeting them, then it's down to business and what I can do for them. But a lot of them, you know, do donate most of the money or some of it to charities or good causes. It's just stuff that they really want out the way. That's why now the website is kind of not really functioning as it should be, because people will now say, look, if you're going to see so-and-so, could you find out if they've got anything that they'd sell? So I've got kind of a list of people that are waiting for that, know what I do. And to be honest with you, as I said before, people don't want it plastered all over social media or my website that, you know, they want me to sell their guitar or, you know, some of their old original contracts when they signed with the band. I mean, that's personally something that I like. I like the paperwork or contracts, you know, anything that's a bit historic, you know, about how, you know, how they got signed or what they got paid for gigs or sort of lyrics, those sort of things, you know. But well, everybody collects.
Well, I know you're. Sorry, mate. I know you're obviously as a big Beatles fan, and that's what Mark Lewisohn's specialty is, isn't it? Is the paper? You know, he's. I remember I follow. You know, his book Tune In on the Beatles is just insane, and he's going to go on and do these further. You know, he is the ultimate Beatles expert, and yeah, he is just all about finding paper. You know, and like contracts, and you know all of the. You know, the letters between Epstein and different people and stuff, and that's the thing. If they can get, because memories fade, you know, and people's, you know, people all you know, will just completely. That's surprised me doing this. You know, people like the fans know so much clearer. Oh well, you did tour Japan then, and then you did Glastonbury, and then you did this. The bands haven't got a clue, you know, because they were off their heads half the time.
Yeah. Well, I could tell you two stories, actually, just going back to what you said about the paperwork and Brian Epstein. This is a funny story, actually. One of the businesses that we had at the time was a small hotel, and I was telling somebody in the bar that I've got some of the Beatles autographs and I wanted to buy Brian Epstein's, and would you believe a woman turned around and said, don't buy one, speak to my husband, and these people were staying in the hotel. Anyway, cut a long story short, he was in a band in the 60s that won a competition where NEMS Enterprises, Brian Epstein's company, would offer management for 1 year. He then went on to the Mary Wells Beatles 1964 tour. He still had his contract of offer with the envelope and a promotional picture of Epstein, and I bought the lot off him.
Wow.
And that is somebody by complete chance heard me say that, and this is the stuff that people like, and that's why I like this kind of paperwork, because it tells an untold story. You know, to be honest with you, there is some bits of paperwork I've got that I can't really, you know, expose, should we say, because some of the things are a bit explosive and it wouldn't probably do me any good, but you know, the probably in the future that would be not interesting read. But these are the things I like because it tells a story and you get to feel a real sense of what it was like. And it's like, history, you know, when I was fresh-faced and I loved Oasis and everything's wonderful, but when you start to read certain things, find out certain things, there was a real tension. There was even, you know, back in 96, there was something brewing then. You know, there was a lot of stuff going on. You know, it wasn't all just how you see them all singing and happy and, you know, rock and roll and having fights and stuff. You know, there were some other serious underlying things, you know, brewing early on, which obviously transpires a few years later. But for me, I like the paperwork. And it is very historic. And that's the kind of stuff that I really like now.
Yeah.
And like you say, lyrics, that kind of stuff.
I'll tell you what, mate. Who's got the Happy Mondays contract written in blood? Is that, because, number one, is that, do you know if that's actually true, that the Happy Mondays factory records contract signed in blood? And if so, do you know who's got them?
Well, you could imagine that, couldn't you, really?
Yeah.
But, no, I don't know, but I know someone who I could ask. But, I don't know. I've got a couple of nice, very early posters from 1989, 1990. They're lovely. On my Grand Central.
Oh, nice. Cool.
But, no, I don't know about that one, I'm afraid.
Is there anything that's your holy grail that you think, oh, if I could get this, then, you know, then that you'd definitely be holding on to that one?
Well, I think we'd all like the initial sort of subject, the contract of them signing, wouldn't we?
Oh, to, wow, yeah.
To creation. That would be nice. I think I've seen... I'm a bit spoiled now, really, because I've had some great stuff. I had, like, Noel's Gold Award for What's the Story. That was really nice. I've had some really nice things that I've sold. I don't know. I think I'm at a good place at the moment. I'm kind of happy, really, doing sort of consultancy now for people. Mm. And if anything pops up that they've got that I could get first chance, I think I'd be happy collecting these... any sort of contracts or paperwork relating to, you know, the label and that kind of thing. But, yeah, I suppose a guitar wouldn't be bad, would it? A guitar or something.
And do you think that these guys that are buying this stuff from you, or that you're, you know, helping broker the deals, are you getting investors, as in people that think, if I buy this for £1,000 and hold on to it, you know, in 10 years' time, it would be worth £10,000? Or is it typically your fans who just want to have a, you know...
Yeah, you get a big crossover, actually. You're right. You've got the people that will pay, you know, £30 for Noel's autograph or, you know, Noel and Liam's or something. And they just want, like, pocket money stuff, which is, like, fair enough, isn't it? You know, it's still great to have. Then you've got people that... I've had all that, sold it, and then want to start getting better and better stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm finding people that have dealt in high-end collecting, where they're collecting Hendrix, Beatles, and then they thought, hold on a minute, you know, there's something new coming through now.
Mm.
And they're seeing that the prices, I mean, the prices over the last 18 months to 2 years have really rocketed. I've seen them really go up.
Really?
And I think they're getting wind of it, and they come to me and they won't want an autograph. They want, like, you know, thing that was on a prop, an album prop. Are you with me? Like off the keyboard or Shaker Maker, or sing off the Definitely Maybe album cover.
Yeah.
Or sort of like lyrics for Live Forever, or, you know, they want something absolutely chaotic, but they want something, and you're like, but the only thing is, you know, I can then go to somebody from the band and say, look, this guy's got X amount, he wants this, what do you think? And, you know, it can, the deal could be done, you know.
Well, that's the thing, like you're saying about, you know, often they don't want it all over the press. And I can understand that because, you know, when you hear, oh, such and such footballer has sold their medals and things, and it does give you that, and it is like the sob story, isn't it? But I can completely understand it. If you've got a loft full of stuff that's just sat there gathering dust that you're not that bothered about keeping, yeah, you want to keep a few gold discs or a few... you know, handwritten lyrics or whatever. But other than that, you know, there's just all this stuff that's just sitting there doing nothing. Well, why not get some money for it?
I mean, Alan, you know, he had a family member that he wanted to get a house for. And, you know, he's got plenty of land on his estate, you know. So, you know, he thought, well, hold on a minute. If I shoot some of this stuff, I might as well just build a house. And that's what he did. £30,000-£40,000 worth of stuff, and he bought this palatial house for a family member on his estate, you know. So why not? You know, it's just sitting there. You might as well go to people that appreciate it. Mm. But that's what happens. It got picked up. And I think there's a lot of people, well, there's a good 3 or 4 people that I know that it did concern them when they saw the sort of the backlash that happens. Papers pick things up and say, oh, so-and-so, you know, does he need the money or this, that, the other? And it's nothing to do with the money. It's to do with, like, you or me having a clear-out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Except for we've sold 6 million records.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we've you know, caused chaos in the music industry. And we've got, a suit that we wore at number 10 to see Tony Blair, and we still got that suit.
We were invited to Chequers. It was Judi Dench, her husband, John O'Farrell, his missus, John Reid, the guy that owned Celtic, Jimmy Savile and a bodyguard, Tony Blair, his missus, me and my missus, and the guy that pressed the nuclear button. But it was funny because I never knew Savile was coming, and it, of course there was nothing about being a paedophile around at this point, and he just came through the door and went, is it now then, now then, now then? I just went, what? I actually went to Blair, I went, it can't get any fucking weirder. And he laughed, do you know what I mean? You know, because only he realised it was fucking ridiculous as well.
You know, and it's like, what do? You take it down to the charity shop?
Exactly.
Or do you see if a collector would enjoy it?
Yeah, no,
but, like,
definitely.
They donate the money anyway to charity, so everyone's happy, aren't they? They've got it out of the house, the charity's made money, and the collector's got something that they love, so... You know, I think doing things, as I call it, under the radar is a lot better for people. Because a lot of collectors, you see, they just keep it in the collection and not many people know about it. You start putting things in big national auction houses once the picture's gone in the book. The picture stays online, doesn't it?
And
everybody knows what it sold for and who sold what and this, that, the other.
Yeah. It's funny, on the after I did the episode with Brian Garcia, we did a, there was a sort of on the kind of the Live Forever forums, you know, the Oasis fan forum.
Yeah.
And there was, most people on there are very, very cool, and especially I think people have got a lot of time for Brian. But a couple of people on there were really snidey, like, oh, yeah, we know he's got original demos that he won't let anyone hear, and we know he's got this, and he won't take a picture of it and show it to us. And it's like, he had the Mystique demos.
That's really unfair. Yeah, that's really unfair to Brian, because he's buying something, you know, that is his, isn't it? He wants to share it, he shares it. But I mean, don't forget, the trouble with these kind of things is there will be copyright infringement as well if you release something like that. I mean, you could get sued by Sony.
Absolutely.
Publishing.
Yeah.
The thing is, you see, what are you going to do? You see, I've had this as well, Brian. I've had the same kind of thing. You know, if you buy a demo tape, I mean, it could be worth like $2,000. Okay. If you put this whole thing out there for people to download, why do people then want to buy the demo tape?
Yeah.
Because everyone's had a copy of it. So the value from the demo tape is, yeah, it's still the original demo tape, but 10,000 people have now got a copy and heard it, the value of that will just drop. Because I've seen this happen before. Yeah, I had it I had it early days as well. So I tend not to really read too much about myself now, or unless it's something sort of positive in the media or something. Because, yeah, and that's really, they were really unfair to him about that. The thing is, if you are in the kind of circle of collecting and know what the score is, that you would understand why you wouldn't do it. As I say, it's nothing to do with money. People could think, oh, I've got a load of money, which I haven't. And people could think, I know loads of people. Well, I know a few people. I don't know everybody. But the thing is, it's hard to really understand, maybe, for some people, that you would just expect someone to give you. It's like, if you've got some lyrics, say, for Wonderwall, isn't it? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, IKEA did 10,000 prints of them. Are you with me?
Yeah.
The value of that original one now will drop because they're being, 10,000 terrace houses, malls all around the country. These things have to be kept, and yeah, I don't blame him for that. But you also have to be very careful as well because of the copyright as well. Because I've seen people put these little demos up on YouTube and they've been removed straight away. And you see, also, Oasis's management wouldn't be too happy either with the stuff circling around. And a lot of it, you see, was just messing around or for fun. You know, they weren't all like strictly demo. There is somewhere there's a lot of talking and messing about and this, that, the other. And, you know, they have to protect their brand as well, don't they?
No, of course, and
their artists, and they don't want this going around. But, you know, it's okay to send somebody a sound clip, probably 10 seconds if they keep going on. But you can't, you know, it's mad to send it, you know. You just have to physically save up and buy one yourself. And that sounds hard, but they shouldn't have really given him any stick for that. Because, you know, he's just protecting his own investment and he's protecting himself from any kind of lawsuit.
Absolutely,
because they will take this quite seriously. You know, it's quite a serious thing.
Well, of course. I mean, he was saying that he had the Mystique demos that ended up getting, and he was just told by Sony, look, don't put these out anywhere because, you know, suddenly they've got this Be Here Now reissue coming up, and that was the big selling point, is that you've got these Mystique demos. And and then so if he had released those, you know, just put them out on YouTube or whatever, and then why are you going to go out and buy that £100 set when you've already got all those exclusive mixes that you've never heard before?
But, I mean, you do have to be very careful, but it is more of the investment as well, you see, because once that's gone,
you know,
who's going to want the original one? You've just got a tape in a box, and haven't you the frame? It's not the same.
But I think you have to be careful.
I think, don't forget, you see, because, you know, he's got a great collection, you know, and, you know, some people might think, oh, you know, we haven't really got anything good like that. And I'm sorry to say there is a bit of jealousy, but there will be with anything, won't there?
Yeah, you know, with
any kind of collecting or any kind of thing that you like, if you've got something better than somebody else. That's why you do get collectors that don't really show things, and it's mainly for that reason as well.
Yeah.
Because they don't get any hassle, they just go silently and collect stuff. But, I mean, of course, you spend thousands of pounds or several hundred pounds on something that you love and you know everybody else will love it, and you want to show your friends on Facebook or Instagram, then, I totally understand why you do it. But sometimes you do have to be a little bit careful what you put out there, because there is copyright even on the photographs. You know, different bits and bobs, you do have to be careful, but you learn these things along the way. But no, they shouldn't have been like that to him, and I think he's, you know, dead right with that one.
Cool. Well, I'll tell you that the one thing that I think is the holy grail that's out there is the Beatles Carnival of Light. You know, that that recording that was it's the only recording that I think is still out there, and I think we know that McCartney's got it. You know, we know he's got it, but I think it's probably just really, really awful. And so he doesn't want it to be released, because right now it's still...
That's another reason why people won't want these demos released as well, either, you know. You know, how they found him as well.
They weren't
intended for that, were they?
But,
you know, things turn up all the time, but I just never know what I find next.
Yeah.
I guess.
Cool. Well, that's absolutely brilliant. I think that's all fine, mate. But thank you so much for your time today, Rob. I think I do really appreciate you coming on. It's been really good fun. And so just remind us again. So how can people get in touch with you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Rob at Britpop Store, Instagram Britpop Store, or they can find me on www.britpopstore.co.uk.
Great.
I think that's most of the things covered. Usually people can drop me a message on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. Britpopstore's on Facebook.
Cool. Good. So if you happen to have those original signed, you know, lyrics or signed things like that, then you want to get it appraised, then I think Rob's your man. But no, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Rob. That's brilliant. And
you're welcome.
And good luck with She's Electric. I mean, you know, we've
that's exciting.
So we'll see how that goes. And do you want to just mention that I know you mentioned about the homeless charity, and there's Alan McGee's charity as well, isn't there, that you've partnered with?
Yeah, the Hep C Trust in London for people with hepatitis C.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things I did for Alan, was to sell quite a lot of stuff that, you know, obviously all the money went to that. That's a brilliant charity. I'd like to really spend a bit more time doing things for those charities as well. Now I'm concentrating more on this now, because obviously the other two businesses in the background, they've been quite hard juggling everything, but I'm now homing in more on this. So that's something I like to get more involved with. But and they're great charities, and you know, he does a lot of things for lots of different people, which sometimes isn't sort of publicised.
Mm-hmm. He does a lot of good work for charity and doesn't like to talk about it. In the words of Smashy and Nicey.
And you know, obviously he's still got his creation management, so he's still managing a lot of the heritage bands as well, getting them back out there and working on Fat Grape's new album as well. So there's always stuff. He's on tour and he's out and DJing all over the place.
That's good. Good. Okay, mate. Well, we'll play out with a song. So what song, either Oasis or from one of those other bands, what do you want to play out
with? Oh, it's got to be Rock and Roll Star, isn't it?
Rock and Roll Star.
You get that one. You get that one every time.
No, not every time. There's been a good mixture. Cool. All right, mate. Well, thank you so much for your time, and we'll speak to you soon. So Rob, that was a really good discussion, really interesting, and as I say, check him out at the Britpop store across the internet. Just to say a bit of breaking news, we on Liam's Facebook uploaded a clip of the Glasto performance with some studio recording of Greedy Soul, and that sounds pretty cool as well, so let's just check that out here. Very cool to hear. So that's 2.5 tracks down now from the album, so we wait to hear the rest. And just to say, the final thing I just wanted to mention is that we have chosen the winner for the competition. So the last competition was from the Nick Amies episode, where he was going to give away a copy of his book, and we asked for you guys to come in and tell us what is your favorite book about music. The answer, The winner is Simon Hughes, who is Shuggy the Bear on Twitter. He voted for the Stone Roses book by John Robb. So it was a great choice, great reason why. So get in touch, Simon, and we will get that over to you. That's it. So as always, stay in touch, stay engaged, stay young.